Hey folks, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron.
It is the Tornado Tony Penica.
And Psychic Tom Padgett with his head up in the stars, seeing what the stars are going to predict for us.
There's some stories about death this week in the MMA circles. Too many. First of all, Tyron Woodley, after the big UFC performance over the weekend of Colby Covington, has vowed to murder Colby Covington in the cage. Literally wants to kill this guy. So, as Joe Rogan said after the fight, Colby is one of those types that he'd actually love it if a bunch of people hated him. So, he's probably eating this right up. But he doesn't care if he draws a lifetime ban from the UFC. Tyron really wants to kill this dude. Crazy stuff. But Rafael Dos Anjos couldn't kill him. Didn't do too well. Anyway. But
Colby, just that in your face, I'm not going to give you time to do anything. I'm not going to give you any punching room. I'm just a rock and sock. I'm coming at you, ever-ready battery, rubbery bunny. It just kept... That was the story of the fight.
Yeah, it reminded me a little of the style of Colton Smith from one of the Ultimate Fighter past seasons. I think he won, and he just had a couple fights, and then he didn't fight again. But he had that grab you around the waist or the chest and hold you tight most of the fight, whether it was on the ground or on the feet. He did a lot of his takedowns that way, too.
Yeah.
It's an interesting style.
And Kenny Florian was saying about a good point last night when he was saying how, there's all that trash talk before the fight. I mean, this was personal. It was a grudge fight. And, Dos Anjos really wanted to knock him out.
Yeah.
And it's got to be frustrating when you can't get any punching room. When the guy's got you in a phone booth and he's an octopus. I mean, it's just nightmare night for...
And he took, Colby took some really tough punches too, some really hard shots to the body, the most damaging ones, but he just walked right through them. I mean, a lot of other guys would have broke their ribs.
And his gas tank stayed on full. What an amazing cardio performance that was.
But his next opponent will probably be Woodley, and Woodley had this to say. This is an exact quote. Hope we don't get any letters, but he says, I ain't never in my existence as an adult human being wanted to fuck somebody up so bad, beat somebody so bad, embarrass somebody so bad, end his career so bad, take his life so bad. I don't even say that figuratively. Literally, I'm going to try to hurt him so fucking bad, they're never going to want to let me fight in the UFC again. That's a fact.
Wow.
So... That's some trash talk for you.
Yeah.
And that's not the only one. That's not the only one talking about death in MMA. Guess who else used the D word? Dana White, believe it or not, is in the news for saying that he will not let Mike Jackson fight Artem Lobov because it might be the first death in the UFC.
Yeah, that was a fascinating post-fight press conference he put on. And of course, there's always, and I don't know if that was Ariel Helwani that had to keep, I don't know, is he allowed at those conferences? I don't even know if he's, but
yeah,
someone asked him after Dana went on the rant about what a friggin' F an idiot this Mike Jackson was, and then some reported, well, does that mean you're going to not have him around? Yeah. Dana, like, what do you think I just said? Oh, yeah. Classic.
Yeah, he says, somebody suggested Artem Lobov, and Lobov, the Russian guy, Connor's friend. He's like 13-14 is his record, this guy. And the 1-1 Mike Jackson is going to get murdered by him, according to White. He says, Artem might kill him. That might be the first death in the UFC. I think that's a bad fight for Mike Jackson. I think Mike Jackson needs to go back to being a reporter or doing whatever the hell he did before he goofed around on Saturday night. And Actually, the announcers gave him more credit than he deserved. It was Jimmy Smith and Joe Rogan. I mean, those guys are made to be announcers together. Have you noticed that? It's like they've been together 20 years. They feed off each other so well. And it was kind of funny because Joe Rogan was kind of pointing out that he was showboating. And then Jimmy Smith was like, well, hey, you know, he's really said before the fight that this is what he was going to do. So he's basically just doing what he said he was going to do. But anyway.
Well, I think what he succeeded in doing is killing his chances. I mean, Dana was just so infuriated that it looked like that piece of trash was just going on, and Jackson wasn't trying to end it. And I like what he said after is, well, I didn't want to give him brain damage. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is a fight.
Yeah. Well, and then there's the joke conspiracy theory that somebody paid Mike Jackson to go let Punk off, basically, and carry him, like Floyd Mayweather was accusing him of doing with Connor. But CM Punk went down.
It just made a bad situation. It made a bad situation worse. If he'd have stopped him quicker, maybe Punk's career wouldn't be over with.
Yeah.
But for 15 minutes of that kind of performance, he's done.
Yeah. And speaking of a guy who's done, Augusto Mendez. This is an interesting story. They granted his UFC release during his suspension through the USADA, but he signed with a company called ACB right away, which is based in Russia, I believe. It's a grappling promotion. And now he's going to be competing under mixed martial arts rules. He is 6-2 so far in 4 years as an MMA fighter. Signed with the UFC after winning 5 in a row. And then he made his octagon debut facing former champion, or future champion, Cody Garbrandt on short notice in 2016. And lost by first round knockout. Then went 1-1 in his next fight. And now he's going to be fighting over in Russia. Since I guess the USADA doesn't matter to them. And the big boxing news over the weekend, other than the results we got to talk about, of course, Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder have agreed to fight each other in the UK, believe it or not. Some big money being thrown around. I'm not sure the exact figure, but pretty crazy.
I know fight with but it might be Joshua to fight Povetkin first. So it's a deal in principle, but I don't think it's further than that right now.
Oh, so it's not set in stone?
No.
News to me. That's why we have Tony on the show.
Right.
Keeps us up to snuff. Now, I didn't get to watch any of the boxing this weekend. I barely caught up on half the fights for the UFC card today and last night. But I got my cheat sheet in front of me. And I did read about the fight that I predicted so boldly. And I got 5 rounds off. I said that Jeremy Horn was going to go down by the end of the 5th. He went down by the end of the 10th. But he did go down. TKO, so I got the result right anyway. And
what round did I say again? Did I say late?
You did say late, I believe.
Please don't ever doubt me.
Okay, now this is the same Jeremy Horn who started off in the UFC back in the 90s. Is this the same one we're talking about?
Oh, did I use the wrong first name? What's Horn's name?
You said Jeremy Horn.
Yeah, it's Jeff Horn.
Jeffrey.
Oh, Jeff, that's more like, okay. Yeah, Jeff Horn. Yeah, that was, all the guts in the world, but kind of a predictable outcome.
The latest De La Hoya to enter boxing is doing pretty decent. He stopped Jose Salgado in the 7th round of their fight on Friday. And then ESPN ranked him as, before the fight, as the 10th best fighter at junior featherweight. So he should be getting some bigger fights soon. Jermell Charlo did just as well as his brother Jermall against mutual opponent Austin Trout. He won a majority decision on Saturday night. Charlo put Trout down twice in the fight, in the third and the eighth rounds, but Trout hung on tough in a fight that fans booed throughout. Interesting. And then, according to this, Charlo wore a lion head on his walk into the ring, which confused some people. Why not? He's going to face 154-pounder Jarrett Hurd in his next fight. Leo Santa Cruz once again defeated Abner Mares in another thrilling fight. Both victories for Mares. They've both been pretty close. But I think they're going to move on. No more third fight talk. Gary Russell Jr. has been talked about as a match to unify the featherweight titles. Tyson Fury, big news. Big heavyweight fight. This one was a fight within a fight. Because he beat up Safiri, but in the midst of the in-ring action, there was a 15-man brawl in the stands, and Tyson and Safiri both stopped fighting each other to watch the fight in the stands.
Yeah, that was classic.
Awesome.
Sometimes the fight in the stands is worth fighting.
Right. And Tyson obviously was way bigger than Safiri, who is a glorified cruiserweight, and just toyed with him, literally. It was not very competitive at all.
Yeah, I like Tyson's trunks. He had Gypsy King. Did you notice that?
No.
He's a King Gypsy. I guess he appointed. He's a self-appointed king, or I wonder if they elected him.
Oh.
Or anointed.
Well, they have the big royal wedding over there, so I guess he just wanted to get into the act.
Yeah. Gypsy King, right there on his trunks. Well, I think he's a few fights away from challenging for the title. What do you guys think?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
That was a serious
deal. And you know what? He was fortunate that he got a very faded Vladimir Klitschko, who was unwilling to really mix it up. If he would have got the Klitschko that fought Anthony Joshua, he would have got knocked out. Klitschko fight. As it was like, you could tell he was definitely on the downside. And I said, it's like no fun when King Kong and Godzilla have a dance. Where you got it with King Kong and Godzilla with Klitschko and Joshua, where they were, you know, it was rock 'em sock 'em robots. Both men were down, both men were hurt. It's, you know, the people wanted them to see. So if Fury goes in there with a Wilder, with a Joshua, with a Povetkin, with one of the top tier guys like that, even Joseph Parker, he is going to be separated from his senses.
Wow. I didn't see any clips of the fight or anything like that, so I don't know how good a shape he's in, or you know, how sharp he looked, but obviously if you're taking a break in the middle of the fight, you're not taking this fight too seriously.
Yeah, he didn't seem too sure. Did you see it, Tony?
I did not.
Yeah, well, I caught it live. There was a stream that I was able to find, and it just had the feel of an exhibition. Because, like you said, he was fighting a cruiserweight, and the guy had just zero offense. I mean, even if he'd have been moving in and tried to trade, I don't know if he could have hurt Klitschko, Tyson. But he didn't even do that. I mean, the guy just really had no game plan. And if you're fighting a guy that's a lot bigger, moving around and running away from him is not really going to solve anything. I mean, well, really, moving in and trading and tying up with him wouldn't have solved anything either. So this match was square one, but it was like a almost like a sparring session. And Tyson Fury looked like he still has at least another 20-30 pounds to lose. His midsection didn't look like a fighter.
Well then, waiting for BoxRec to load here, but while we're doing that, let's go over UFC 225 results. Robert Whittaker and Yoel Romero in the main event went to a split decision for Whittaker. It's one of the ones I did not catch. I watched just about every other one on the card but that. But
I'm sure you followed the weight cutting drama.
Not really. What had happened? What happened? What did I miss?
Oh, okay. Well, you've been out of the loop. Okay. Well, Romero missed weight again.
Wow.
And there's a huge scandal here. And the rules are supposed to be that if you miss weight at the 9 o'clock in the morning weigh-in, you have 2 hours. Well, so Romero's doing everything he can, because I believe he was about a pound off or something like that, no more than 2 pounds off. But he was really doing what he could, and he was medically cleared to lose to have 2 hours to lose that. Well, here comes some clown from the Illinois State Athletic Commission that's not a medical professional, and this is about an hour and 15 minutes into the weight-cutting attempt, and he said, you're done. You're not going to lose any more weight, because I said so. So what that meant was Romero officially weighed in at 185.3 or something like that. So what that meant, you know, normally you get a pound of slack, but if it's for a title, you don't. So what that meant was Romero could not have won the title, no matter what happened in the fight. And it's just brought this whole missing weight thing to a boiling point. And I suppose I should have sent you guys a thread that from the jungle fighting down in Brazil. What they're going to do, they're really going to start penalizing these guys.
Oh, yeah, you talked to me about
weight.
That. You did mention that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just turned into an obscenity, because they went over all the guys who have missed weight. And the one, well, what we have, one gal, Mackenzie Dern. Yeah, she was contracted to fight at 115, comes in at 122. Okay.
Ridiculous.
And it's a big advantage. You're cheating, and you're going to get the W, and you got to give up, what, 20% of your purse. Love that phrase.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to move up, and you don't have to worry about a loss. I mean, it's got to come to a head, because there are certain guys, like Eddie Alvarez, for example. He never misses weight. And it's the same scales that these other guys have, because Romero was blaming the scales. Well, there's always an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
But why is it some guys don't miss, and other guys do? And get like Darren Till.
You know, those Brazilian scales, they're closer to the equator, so, you know, they're not as accurate as these scales.
So, what jungle fighting is going to do is they're going to also start penalizing according to how many pounds you're over, you're going to be losing points on the scorecard before the fight even begins and lose a big chunk of your pay.
Nice.
And another thing that's been brought up, perhaps USADA's responsible for a lot of this, because it's the training, and we all know that. It's the training that's the hard part. The fight's
right.
Kind of the reward. It's the training where the damage occurs, and if you're getting beat up and not using growth hormone or steroids or testosterone, a lot more injuries now.
Yeah.
So maybe it's an unsolvable problem. So they're going back to afternoon weigh-ins now. It's going to be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. No more of that 9 o'clock stuff.
And I heard Al Iaquinta really ripped into Dana White over that one on the last Ariel Helwani show before his transition to ESPN. I did not get to listen to it, but I did read that he really went off, which is, you know, Al Iaquinta style, but this one was pretty serious. So I can't wait to catch that, but I'm sure it was pretty juicy.
Al doesn't like these afternoon weigh-ins.
No,
he wants to still keep it at 9 in the morning.
Yeah, not at all. Because, I mean, I get the gist without even hearing his argument, because from a fighter's perspective, all I can think of is the guy that was on our wrestling team who would weigh in for 189, and he would bring a big cooler with him, and he would just eat as soon as possible after that weigh-in, because he hadn't eaten in a couple days usually to make that weight. He was really a glorified heavyweight. And so he'd cut down to 189, step on the scale, and then scarf everything down. You know, like, and it's sometimes he would be wrestling within an hour after eating all that food. And it's just not healthy. So if you got a 4 o'clock weigh-in in the afternoon and you're on the preliminary card, you're maybe fighting at 7 o'clock, 3 hours later. I mean, you really have time for your food to digest.
I understand, but then maybe the answer would be, if you contract to fight at 170, maybe don't get to 220 between fights. Maybe that might be an idea, you think?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I just, the thing is, it's becoming the issue. And, again, I hate to sound my age, but I just don't remember this stuff happening decades ago. It seemed like it just wasn't this persistent of a problem. I mean, guys would miss on occasion, maybe, but I just don't remember it.
Yeah, I guess they need to have, you know, some weight-cutting classes at the UFC conference they do every year. Something.
Or just like with Romero. Why does he continue to miss weight? Why doesn't he just move up?
Yeah. Ridiculous.
I mean, if the weight losses, and I understand it's terrible. It sucks. There's nothing nice about it. But you are a professional. You agreed to that. Now, that's the weight division you said you're going to fight at. And if it's continually a niche, you maybe just move up in weight.
Right. And for the other rest of the card, we talked already about Covington. He got the unanimous decision win over Dos Anjos. Totally dominated the fight, bell to bell. He did take some hard punches to the head and the body a few times, but never seemed rattled, never stopped coming forward, and got a lot of takedowns. And then, speaking of takedowns, Holly Holm got the most takedowns in her career.
One more thing about Colby. Tony, did you hear that this Colby Covington guy wanted to take the belt and to put it on Donald Trump's desk?
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, so he went off in one of his interviews, called the Philadelphia Eagles. He had some disparaging remarks about them for their no-show. Called the Golden State Warriors a bunch of pussies. And sorry, this is his nice personality. I mean, he's just a continual loose cannon. And he said he's going to take that belt to the White House, put it on Trump's desk, and said, we're making the UFC great again.
Nice.
So the question is, will the Donald take him up on that? Because Trump is a sports guy.
And an MMA guy. You know, he was invested in that affliction.
Yeah.
League, so who knows? Who knows? And speaking of Russians, Andrei Arlovsky. We'll talk about that in a minute. But Covington is a crazy character for sure. And this next fight ties into the weight issue too, because they were talking about it a lot during the fight, the commentators there, Rogan and Smith, about how much bigger Megan Anderson seemed, and you know, she only used it in the first 30 seconds of the fight, it seemed like, but she's definitely
what
a bigger woman.
Remember, they kept talking about her when she was the Invicta champ, about how she'd be a great challenger for Cyborg.
Yeah.
What a letdown.
And Holly Holm just had the right strategy. She kind of stayed on the inside of her range, Anderson's range, so Anderson couldn't land any kicks or, you know, long punches, and that was really the takedowns and everything after that was really the key to that win for Holly, but Holly looked really good. I just wish she had that kind of a strategy, winning strategy against Cyborg instead of trying to go toe-to-toe with her. Bad idea. And then Andrei Arlovsky did fight. He got the unanimous decision loss over Tai Tuivasa. And, man, that was a bloody slugfest. Awful and ugly all around. No defense. Ugly stuff. Ugly. Tuivasa, I mean, obviously he's now a player in the division, so we'll have to keep an eye out on him. Phil Brooks, otherwise known as CM Punk, obviously lost to Mike Jackson. And it wasn't really a pretty fight. You know, Phil Brooks had his moments. I mean, CM Punk, whatever you want to call him. But he just really had no striking ability, and which is surprising because, you know, you've got a coach, Duke Rufus, there. And, not that he had much of a ground game either, but, you know, Jimmy Smith and... Joe Rogan are sitting there, like, begging him to shrimp out and, you know, try to get out of the bottom position. And you can hear his coaches in the background yelling, "Don't punch from the bottom!" You know, he doesn't even know that yet. It's, come on.
You know, and the thing is, he's been training pretty regular for a couple of years now in a world-class facility.
Yeah.
Our former guest. And Rogan, apparently on his podcast, kind of went off on him just for a complete lack of athleticism.
Yeah.
And I thought that he had some kind of background somewhere, yeah, like in collegiate wrestling. Well, apparently he didn't even wrestle in high school.
Yeah, I noticed that because he was going at the takedowns all wrong. Yeah. He only went with one takedown with good technique, and he got it. But all the other takedowns he went for, he went at it wrong. He was going for the guy's waist area or above, and you really got to get lower. You got to get behind those knees and sweep it right up. You know, that's why they do those drills where they kind of snake across the floor one side to the other doing takedowns.
Yeah.
So I don't get it.
And apparently he had no bad. He wasn't even a karate guy. You know, taekwondo or kung fu or judo, jiu-jitsu, none of it. I mean, the guy has no background in anything. And he just kind of makes sense now because apparently he has no athleticism, no martial arts background. You know, I mean, I respect him for trying to live out his dream, but his dream's turned into a nightmare. And Dana said, this is it. He won't be back.
No.
And the fact that he's almost 40 years old.
Not much time.
Yeah.
Floyd Mayweather's going to have to fight somebody else.
You know, that would have been a good segue into MMA for Floyd.
Well, how about this idea? How about Snoop Dogg versus CM Punk on the amateur circuit?
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know who would win that one.
Exhibition.
I mean, I even got a call from, you know, one of the guys from the gym, and he says, "Tom, you're thinking of coming back?" Shut up! I said, he looked terrible. I said, "No, come on." Shut up. It didn't look that bad, you know, but yeah. Still. Yeah, I mean.
And we had Curtis Blades, another guy who's kind of getting washed up. He took advantage of Alistair Overeem's new cautious style. I think he's been hit couple of times in his last fights hard enough to make him a little more hesitant in the pocket, and Curtis Blades made him pay for it. He got a TKO from, it says elbows, but it was really the knee that started it all, right to the perfect area. And you know, a guy with Alistair's Muay Thai and kickboxing background should have known to avoid that, but he got the,
well, yeah, I mean, you just have to go by results, and you wonder if Alistair's best days are long behind him.
Yeah, but the elbows really was what caused the referee to stop the fight, and it was probably one of the most explosive elbows I've ever seen because of the way the guy's
elbows.
Face exploded.
Elbows, those things are called. Elbows.
Elbows, oh, okay. He hit him like the last time, and blood just flew up immediately after the elbow landed. It was like instant laceration. Bad one.
Yeah, Overeem just looked, you know, that old cliche, one picture's worth a thousand words.
Yeah.
And when you've seen him just in that stupor, that bloody mess, it's like,
whew. It reminded me of a local event I went to one time, and it was a little shorter, stockier guy against a taller guy, and I think it was heavyweights, and the shorter guy did the takedown and knocked the guy out with elbows, and the bigger guy, a big tall guy, walks out the ring, and I got a picture of him, and his nose is on sideways, and he's got the big puffy eye, and he just looked like he was in shock. He couldn't believe
so
it.
So you want to be a fighter, huh?
Right. Claudia Gadella got a big win over Carla Esparza. That was a split decision win. I didn't get to see that one. Mirsad Bektik beat up on Ricardo Lamas, who was looking pretty good in his last few fights, but just can't seem to be consistent. He's up and down a lot. And this was a split decision, so obviously it was very close. I guess that's good for him, but can't seem to keep the wins going. Chris De La Roca beat Rashad Coulter by TKO in the second round. And Anthony Smith demolished Rashad Evans. Another time knee started it and finished it immediately. Evans took almost the whole round, 53 seconds in. No, not almost the whole round, almost the whole minute.
That is five losses in a row.
Yeah, so
Rashad
Evans.
I mean, he stick a fork in him.
I don't think he's coming back, especially not
against
anybody.
He had a great career, and he was in that transitional phase. You know, he was on the Ultimate Fighter second season.
Right.
And that went back to 2005. So he's done.
We had former guest of ours, Sergio Pettis, beat up on Joseph Benavidez. Another split decision there. Sergio was on our show way back in the day, years ago now. He was a prospect before he even got to the UFC. Charles Oliveira beat Clay Guida by, what else? A guillotine choke, his favorite submission. And really wasn't actually very competitive before that either. I mean, it only went 2 minutes in, but Oliveira just looked so much sharper with his striking all of a sudden. He's definitely put some work in there, I think. And he was really crisp. He had the best defense, I think, I've ever seen. In a UFC fighter that's used to submissions, you know, and more of a jiu-jitsu expert. He had the best striking defense I've seen. Hands right up to the face, didn't have a mark on him. And Clay was trying to touch him. Clay was trying to definitely beat him up and just couldn't get his range, couldn't get his timing. And then they made him pay for it. See what else? Got a couple other ones. Dan Ige in the first fight of the night. Also got the TKO from punches over Mike Santiago. And that wraps it up. Let's see if BoxRec is back. There we go. Alright. So let's see if we didn't forget anything from last week before we go on.
Well, we had, when we get to the boxing, I got some fights to go over.
Some fights from last week?
Yep.
Okay. See, it was a big upset over in the UK. The Hooker fight I joked about last week, remember? Maurice Hooker. He got the big win over Terry Flanagan there. And then, what else did we miss? Jose Pedraza beat Antonio Moran. Enrico Colling beat Andres Pocomico. Never heard of that guy. Abner Mares, obviously we talked about that one. And which fights did you want to talk about, Tony?
Well, we had the FS1 card last Sunday night. From California, and the main event was our former guest Travis Kaufman fighting a late substitute. He was supposed to fight Antonio Tarver. Tarver, I don't know if he failed a drug test or something. That fight got called off. So they had a late substitute come in, but before the fight, really, and I forget which announcer said, he goes, "This is going to be a closer fight than expected because this kid's got a good amateur background and, you know, a good style." So, okay. First round starts, and I'm looking up the information on it right now as we speak. Fight starts, you know, Kaufman comes out, and within 30 seconds has this kid on the ground with a right hand. Bam!
It's over, it's over. That's what I was thinking. It's over. They ain't going to get out of the first round.
Exactly.
Was I wrong?
Yeah, because, you know, we got up and, you know, Kaufman's pressing the action and steps into a big left hook. I mean, Xander, his name was. So he gets hit with a shot and his knees, just completely, his legs completely go, and he goes down.
Travis was lucky. It was toward the end of that first round. He looked toast. Wow.
Because when he got up, I mean, he was you know, stepping all over the place. And he back to his corner, and really you could see him struggling after that. And I know Travis has been off about a year and a half now, and he even said afterwards that he didn't feel sharp in there. And his punches looked sluggish. You know, it didn't really have a lot after that first big right hand. And I don't know how much can be attributed to him having his bell rung, or maybe not being in the best shape, or, you know, that ring rust. I don't know. But
maybe, probably, Tony, a combination of all the above.
I think you're right. Because he looked slow in there. His punches after that first big right hand didn't have a whole lot of snap behind him. And got the decision, the majority decision, 95-95 on one card, 96-94 on the other two. I don't know if he won that fight.
Yeah, I mean, let's just say it was close, and if it would have went the other way, it wouldn't have been a shock, in my opinion.
Right.
Now, Travis is Marshall's son. Is that correct?
Correct. That is correct.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, he's definitely got some work to do after this one. Hope he's back in the gym working harder.
You just did the Ed McMahon without even knowing it, Tony. Yes, you are correct. let's see. We got some fights coming up this weekend, obviously. Some big ones. The biggest one, I guess, is Errol Spence Jr. versus Carlos Ocampo. We're going to get to that one eventually, but let's start off north of the border. Not talking about Donald Trump and Trudeau here. We're talking about Quebec. Yves Ulysses Jr., he's 15-1, fighting Ernesto España, who's 25-0-1 in the main event. And then co-main event, we got heavyweight Simon Keen, 14-0, fighting Adam Braidwood, 13-1. And if you didn't know it... Braidwood is the guy that was famous for killing that UFC fighter. I'm drawing a blank on his name, though. The guy that died up in Canada there after his fight. The UFC
veteran. Was it Wyatt? No. I know who you mean now.
Yeah.
And the guy's been on a losing streak in MMA.
Right.
Yeah, we watched that fight. It got knocked out in the second round. He dropped in the first round quite a bit. Shouldn't have been signed in the first place.
Right. Let's see. That's good. This might be the mismatch of the week. A female fight from Germany. Layla McCarter coming in at 41-13-5 against Eva Bajic, who is 14-12. It's for the GBU Female World Welterweight title and the WIBF World Welterweight title. And we got another one in Germany, Francesco Pianetta. He is 35-3-1 at heavyweight, fighting Peter Milas, who is 11-0. That's for the IBO International Heavyweight title. And then the vacant IBO Intercontinental Super Middleweight title is in the co-main event. Vartan Avatizian, who is 16-0-1, fighting Ruben Eduardo Acosta, who is 36-15-5. And way, way down at the bottom of the card, I guess it's because it's being promoted by Marco Huck, is a Marco Huck fight. He has 40 wins, 5 losses, 1 draw. He's fighting Jakub Saglum. How about that for a name? Jakub.
What's that name?
It's his first name. Hey, Jakub. Come here. Jakub Saglum. He is 40-4, so almost identical records somehow. I don't think Jakub has the caliber of opponents as Marco. Just venture to guess that. Especially when he's promoting the card. One of them looks good on paper matchups. But it's probably not going to be in real life. Baja, California, we got Jose Zepeda at lightweight leading the card there. He's 28-1, fighting Carlos Diaz Ramirez, who's undefeated, 26-0. Co-main event there is Jose Miguel Quirino, who's 19-2-2, fighting Victor Efrain Sandoval, who's 28-3. Oh, and then some other big ones down in Mexico. This is a two-fight card. Christian Mijares, he's 59-8-2, fighting Wilfredo Vasquez Jr., who's 24-7-1. And somehow there's no title on the line there or in the co-main event. With Roberto Ortiz, 35-2-2, against Jose Lopez, who's 27-6-2. And maybe there's no belts because there's no weights. It doesn't even tell you what weight class these guys are in. Guess they didn't figure that out yet. They're going to tell them the day of the fight what weight they're fighting. There's one from Poland, Andrzej Fonfara. 29-5, fighting Ismael Silla, who is 25-5. And co-main event there is Michael Cieslak, who's 16-0, fighting Dusan Kirsten, who's 8-9. And we go to Hatohe, Puerto Rico, the big WBO fight of the week. For the World Light Flyweight title, Angel Acosta coming in at 17-1, and Carlos Buitrago, who is 30-3 with one draw. And the co-main event is Kevin Nieves at lightweight, 12-1-1, fighting John Carlos Torres, who's 10-0. Good stuff there. So we got coming up. Too crazy. Here's our Somebody's O's Gotta Go Fight of the Week from the UK. Main event, Lewis Ritson, 15-0, versus Paul Hyland Jr., who's 18-0 for the BBBFC British lightweight title. And we got co-main event, Chris George, 14-1, fighting Josh Kelly, who's 6-0, for the Commonwealth British Empire welterweight title and the World Boxing Association International welterweight title. And then we have super bantamweights, Gavin McDonald, 19-1-2, fighting Stuart Hall, who's 21-6-2, for the WBC International super bantamweight title. And Charlie Edwards, 12-1 at super flyweight, fighting Anthony Nelson, who's also 12-1 at super flyweight, for the vacant WBA Continental super flyweight title. And if you haven't got enough titles on this card, we got one more. Arfan Iqbal at cruiserweight, he's 12-0, fighting Simon Valili, who is 13-1. That's for the BBBFC English cruiserweight title. And another one in the UK, not so much of a supporting undercard here, but the main event's good. Paul Economides. He is 21-7, fighting Jason Cunningham, who's 23-5, for the BBFC Central Area Super Bantamweight title. There that is. And then down in Hartford, Connecticut this weekend, we have Richard Rivera, 7-0, fighting Jamie Solorio, who's 12-3-2, for the vacant ABF Continental America's Light Heavyweight title. And the UBF All-America Light Heavyweight title. Two brand new titles they just invented just for this card. I wouldn't doubt it. Then we got fights in Maryland. Jerome Quigley Jr., 18-0, fighting Raymond Serrano, who's 24-5, for the vacant USBA welterweight title and World Boxing Council USNBC welterweight title. Another somebody Zoe's got to go fight in the co-main event there. Kobe Abreedy, 11-0 at featherweight, and Drew Carell, who's 9-0. And we got two fights full of TBAs. Two fight cards, that's great. And it's Frisco, Texas, hosting the Errol Spence Jr. fight. He comes in at 23-0. Carlos Ocampo, his opponent, comes in at 22-0. And there's another main event where somebody's always got to go. That's for the IBF World Featherweight title. Co-main event, Daniel Roman, 24-2, fighting Moises Flores, who's 25-0. And then Roman also has a tie. That's for the WBA World Super Bantamweight title. And, of course, we got some more on this stacked card. We got Javier Fortuna, 33-2-1, fighting Adrian Granados, 18-6-2. And sometimes you find the Jesus Fight of the Week when you're not even looking for it. Stephen Fulton, 12-0, fighting Jesus Ahumada, who is 14-1 in the middle of that card. And that's the last one of the week, too. I wouldn't have found another Jesus fights. There's two Jesus fights on this card, too. We got Ahumada and Aguinaga. Ahumada's 14-1. Jesus Aguinaga is 5-6-2. So he's got a tougher road ahead because he's fighting a guy named Roberto Marroquin, who's 27-4-1. And that's pretty much it. For this week's schedule, it's slowed down quite a bit from all the blockbuster fights last week. I believe that's it for stories. I feel like I'm forgetting something, though.
Well, yeah, apparently Triple G and Canelo is on now.
Oh, really?
I heard
I'm
that.
Forgetting something, then.
Yeah, I just got the ticker tape when I got home today.
Let me see what's coming up, too. I just forgot
and I think the purse split... 57.5 to 42.5, something like that, something crazy. They got it done.
Maybe all that criticism got to somebody.
Yeah. Because I, you know, no disrespect to Danny Jacobs, but I just think that it wouldn't have been the fight.
Right. Well, let's see if we got any MMA coming up before we close out the show. June 23rd is the next UFC fight. So we got Bellator going on. I know we didn't talk about the results either of the Professional Fight League. We never talked about that. June 29th, obviously, I guess that's not going to be an upcoming weekend thing. June 29th for Bellator. June 21st is the next Professional Fighters League, so that's the closest event coming up. See who we got on that card. Luis Firmino, 20-8, versus Will Brooks, who's 18-4. That should be a good one. Kayla Harrison, 0-0, fighting unknown fighter. That's always good. Rashid Magomedov, 20-2, fighting Jason High, who's 21-6. Rashid Yusupov, who's 10-0, fighting Rakeem Cleveland, who's 18-9-1. Another UFC vet, Ramzi Najim, 9-6, fighting Brian Foster, who's 27-10. Ronnie Marks, 18-5, fighting Sean O'Connell, 17-9. Smilino Rama, I believe he fought in the UFC too, 10-3, fighting Brandon Halsey, who's 10-3 as well. Islam Mamadov, 14-2, fighting Yuki Kawana, who's 14-1-5. And then Maxim Grishin, 26-7, fighting, great last name for an MMA fighter, Jason Butcher, who's 11-2. And Tiago Tavares, also on the card, 21-7-1, fighting Robert Watley, who's 10-1. Chris Wade, 12-3, fighting Nathan Schulte, who's 11-3. Dan Spawn, 16-5, fighting Bazigit Ateyev, who is 17-1. And then Vinny Magalhaes, 14-9, fighting Jamie Abdallah, who's 2-2. Vinny won't let me follow him on Twitter. He's my least favorite, Vinny. Because he was sponsored by Zions for a while. And I'm Zions Socks on Twitter. It's funny. Vinny and I go way back. Vinny Michael Hayes. Anyway, he's leading off the card. Next PFL. We'll see how that goes. So unless you guys have anything to add to the broadcast, I guess we're out of content for now. Oh, I do think I did forget one thing. We are pretty much guaranteed to have a guest next week. I had a blast from the past reach out to me. A guy named Manny. He connected me. No, not that Manny. The guy who was involved with Kalisha Wild Wild West. I don't know if you remember that interview, Tony.
Kalisha very well.
Yeah, that was a good interview. She's a classy girl. I don't know if she's still fighting, but he was contacting me about somebody else who just apparently happens to be fighting 10 minutes away from me in a card on the 23rd of June, promoted by Murphy's Boxing. And it's Mark DeLuca's opponent, Mark the Bazooka DeLuca, the guy whose father taught me how to fight. And so I'm going to be interviewing Mark's opponent somehow. 6 degrees of separation by accident. It's crazy. So he said, yeah, we'll set it up, and I got the guy's number to get in touch with him, so I'll do that over the course of this next week and get him enough notice so we can come on next Thursday, just in time before the show. And hopefully I'll get some press passes, because I'd really like to go to this card. But my guy that I usually get him from said that they're too cheap to do publicity for this fight, so nobody's ever heard of it. I'm going to be surprised if it even goes forward, because I haven't seen a drop of advertising for it. So kind of found out about it by accident. So we'll see what happens. But it's a great place for a fight, I know that. It's a great place for a concert. That's where I go to a lot of my concerts. But we have that to look forward to. And then maybe we can, you know, have the Murphy's Boxing people get us an interview with the Bazooka on the same night. We'll do what we did with Smiling Sam Alvey that one time, Tony. We let him talk to his opponent for a minute before we got him.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was nice. Anyway, well, we'll figure something out. Till next week.
Thanks. All right, well, gentlemen. Oh, by the way, let me just finish with this. Happy birthday, President Trump.
Oh, it's his birthday today?
Yes, sir.
Oh, man.
I
didn't even send him a card. I'm a bad citizen.
Well, Colby Covington will be sending him the belt. He's taking the belt to him. That'll be his birthday gift. And I have a feeling he's going to take him up on that.
Yeah.
We'll hold me to it now. That's my psychic prediction. Trump will take him up on it. I better be right.
Well, you know, he could die in his next fight, so might be a permanent gift.
So.
We'll see. Yeah, that's crazy. Another year older. Oh well. Well, he's looking good for his age. Did you guys happen to see the clip that they showed? It was kind of like on a blooper reel of the Korean summit. And Trump said something like, oh, it's nice all you camera people are here to make us look nice and neat and thin. And they panned over to Kim, who's the chubby short guy. his Asian face went white. It was funny.
Oh, God. Well, hey, you know, and maybe for our next pay-per-view, we'll see Trudeau and Donald just get in the ring and settle it.
Maybe he'll get his eyebrows knocked off, right?
Yeah.
All right, guys. Talk to you later.
All right, guys. All right. Week. We'll do it.
Sounds good. Have a good weekend, gentlemen.
You too. Okay. Adios.